Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the New Statesman podcast. Emily Thornberry, El Gatto, Theresa May, Jeremy Corbyn, Jeremy Paxman, Philip Hammond. What do these people all have in common? Well, they're among the winners and losers in our campaign retrospective, election-y, whatever you want to call it, super special podcast. And also, you'll be able to hear what we think of Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill, who we think is having the best Labour leadership race, as it were, and what we think will happen on election night, and all the rest from the NS team.
The election is nearly over, Stephen, and I, for one, could not be happier.
Yes. Yeah, no, I am also looking forward to the end.
It's just felt like a pretty grim slog, even though it was technically a short campaign. Let's look at it through a prism that we sometimes use, which is winners and losers. And I guess take it in turn to nominate somebody as a winner or loser. Give me your first nomination as a winner or loser of the campaign.
I think the first winner, obviously, I think basically, regardless of the results, has to be Jeremy Corbyn.
Jez, we can.
There's a phrase I keep wanting to find a better alternative to than one I keep using, which is Labour's professional class. I don't mean that, but yeah, kind of basically everyone who works for the Labour Party or movement in some description were basically unified at the start of this campaign that they were going to get crushed. And then
had a lot of talk about Labour's floor. What's Labour's floor, yeah, which you don't kind of hear so much anymore?
And they all had this sense of, basically, they had like, we have to get the best defeat possible. And depending on who you were, that meant different things, right? If you were a trade union political officer, that meant protecting as many MPs who had done good things to represent their local shop workers or their local, you know, like people who'd been friends of the movement, as it were. If you were a factional operative, it meant saving as many of your people as possible. If you were one of the candidates who is actually touring the country running for the leadership, Yvette and Chukka, then it meant visiting as many people who ultimately did make it back, because there's no use in gratitude if that person's not available to nominate you. And if you were Jeremy Corbyn, it meant doing well enough to keep the idea of doing a repeat of Kinnock and getting a second crack, hopefully getting to get some of your changes through. And he has undoubtedly, basically, I think, regardless of the result, and I imagine we'll get into predictions at the very end of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, you've been fine to do predictions on all the other podcasts that you've been seeing on the side of the New Statesman podcast.
But this is my best pod prediction. But anyway, we'll get into the kind of prediction at the end of it. But I think regardless of the result, it's very clear to me, you know, the sensible people in the parliamentary party have basically gone, look, challenging him would be a catastrophic mistake. There's a lot of pressure being put on the two leadership candidates to, you know, not do anything stupid. Like
the other two people who've done a lot of showing and meeting and greeting and going to other people's constituencies are Angela Rayner and John Ashworth, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that they're also manoeuvring, or are they just putting their shoulder to the wheel and being helpful?
I think Angela is manoeuvring. I don't think John Ashworth is. I think partly that, I mean, the slight difficulty, I think, for a lot of people like John Ashworth, who I think is a very compelling and quite powerful cat. Yeah, I think he, Emily Thornberry, are people who are very well placed if there is a leadership election to go, I was loyal, we need to have some kind of change, but I will be a guarantor of the things about this project.
Yeah, I'm not the Blairite counter-revolution, yeah, but I am slightly different.
But the difficulty in all of these things is, the thing people forget is that there are some people who were, you've got to have a path to the ballot, right? And while Yvette is in the game, John Ashworth it's just like they
where they've got too many of the same people.
Where is he getting his nominations from? Whereas Angela Rayner, I think, is and Emily Thornberry are well placed. If a group which goes, okay, we need to have someone who can unify the whole of the party, the whole breadth. Angela Rayner, I think, has done a good job presenting herself as one of the options in that slot. If something happens to Tom Watson, if he doesn't make it back,
I think
on
it's
Thursday,
very
for
worrying
example.
That actually the two people who've been most, obviously thinking about and feeling their way around this are two people who ran, even if only for a very short time, in Chukwuemeka's case last time, right? That's not, that gives me the heebs. I just feel like that's the definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different answer. That's what slightly worries me about that.
I think it sort of depends how similar the campaigns they run are. I was about to talk about the Labour leadership, and then I remember that I picked as my first winner someone who I will say, well, one of the reasons why he's won is he's seen off an immediate attempt to get rid of him.
We can go back to your thing, haven't you, which said that if Jeremy Corbyn goes, I mean, this is always your thing, and your predictions, it will be at a time of his choosing. And I think that's definitely what's true at the end of this, at the end of his campaign, right?
Yeah.
After having seen a sort of drought of people who were very Corbynite on Twitter and on Facebook, there are now people who are re-enthused, I think, by his strong performances in interviews and the rallies and things like that. That has buoyed him up again.
Yeah, and I think the group in both the parliamentary party and the membership that I think will be most empowered by the result are people who think that, whether because of his history, because he's old, because he's not in the right place on security, then basically think that you can have electable Corbynism, you cannot have electable Corbyn. I think that group of people are the people who've had the best campaign. And obviously from the point of the overall Corbyn project, that again is another reason why he has to be counted as a winner.
I think I might be in that group of people, actually. I think that it's been really interesting to see. If you take out all the things that, think about what the attack, the attacks have been. Yeah, there have been some of them that's just a straightforward, who do you want to negotiate Brexit thing. But, lots of things relating to comments from the 80s, and Diane Abbott also got attacked for comments from the 80s. The successor is unlikely to have that baggage. So I think actually the platform and the style of politics has had a greater appeal possibly than we might have thought. And if you take away the things that are Corbyn specific, then actually that is quite an kind of encouraging sign. I think Peter Wilby's written this in the magazine, about the fact that there won't be such a terror of a kind of overtly left-wing manifesto, or at least things like nationalisation of rail and energy, which are completely mainstream centre-left things in Europe, but in Britain are kind of considered to be just near adjacent to communism.
Well, I mean, I kind of think I'm always a bit dubious about the policies are popular.
Did it with Deb Miliband as well, yeah. And we went, actually, it turns out all his policies are really popular, and then it was all for nothing.
I mean, I just don't actually think, and the interesting thing is, although the manifesto as a kind of package of messages did sort of burst Labour out. Actually, when you ask people what policies they remember, mostly the policies people have noticed have been ones they didn't like from the Tory manifesto. Some people, obviously they're mostly a demographic to benefit from the tuition fees abolition, have noticed it. But actually the message people have taken from the Labour manifesto is Labour are a group of nice people who will give you a nice thing. And actually, that's kind of the thing about the policy's this, the policy's that, is actually your policy story is a lot more important in terms of getting elected. So my instinct is that if they do, if they do lose the election, the kind of the question will be what are the things they need to add to the sort of policy mix.
I think they do need to add rigour. And I think whatever you think about the reasons, and I fully believe that the reaction to Diane Abbott has been accelerated, and she's been held to higher standards because she's a black woman. The fact is still that Labour do face an extra level of scrutiny about detail and about economics. The Tories had an uncosted manifesto, and Labour have been using this good line about, the only numbers in there were the page numbers. But nonetheless, that's kind of, they have that blow has not landed on them in the way that it has on Labour. Still, that is a big Achilles heel for Labour.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a lot of bad reporting of focus groups in this election, because obviously they are, I always get my quantitative and my qualitative mixed up. But obviously, they they're hard to draw general patterns of voting behaviour.
Yeah, they're qualitative. They give you how people feel about stuff and impressions. They can't help you say they'll get X and receipts.
Yeah, but I think the really useful thing is that telling us how people feel about things. And what's striking across all of the focus groups, particularly the Britain Thinks ones, which are the ones I've seen the most of, is that the things that hit home were the stuff which confirmed people's fears and opinions about the party. The thing about the reason why the police numbers interview is the one they really remember, and actually people have kind of forgotten Diane Abbott's other less good interviews, is because it hit a lot of the things people think about Labour. It was something they agree with, more police on the numbers, but they didn't seem to know what the numbers were, and they seemed a bit incompetent.
That is nice but ineffectual.
That is basically Labour's 2007 kind of post-financial crisis problem that the party hasn't really shaken off. And the thing people remembered most from the Tory campaign was fox hunting. Why? Because the Tories are posh and cruel. And those are the things that people have absorbed. And then, of course, there is exactly, as you say, the added thing that she doesn't have that shield of looking like default man. So she's particularly vulnerable. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why people react badly to her in focus groups, and one of the reasons why there's been this kind of badger baiting of her among bits of the press.
And also purely because she's memorable, right?
Yeah.
She's literally the only black woman that you see on the TV news most nights.
Yeah.
Whereas generic, you know, how many voters really could tell the difference between Chris Grayling, Daniel Hannan and Ian Duncan Smith?
Well, this comes down to my favourite fact about focus groups, which is most focus groups think every woman Labour politician is Harriet Harman. So you like show them a picture of like, and including this, you're like, you and it, this weird thing where you'll kind of obviously, when someone knows they must be giving the wrong answer. So you show them a picture of Yvette Cooper and someone says very confidently, oh, that's Harriet Harman. Then you show a picture of Margaret Hodge and you can feel this silence. They're like, well, that can't also be Harriet Harman.
But then you kind of feel like, cut your losses, say Harriet Harman for all of them at that point, one of them will be. In the defence of those people, there are a lot of quite similar hairstyle and manner type Labour politicians from that era. You know, I put kind of Tessa Jowell, Patricia Hewitt, Ruth Hunt and Harriet in, you know what I mean? In that sort of...
But I think the thing is, Harriet...
slightly head girlish kind of, and a very severe bob that says, I mean business.
I mean, but that is why they all kind of look like Harriet. But yes, sorry, Iris, who's your first winner and loser?
9 hours later, we get to the next one. Well, should we do an obvious one that is the kind of counterpoint to that, and which is an ironic loser, which is Theresa May. Because she called...
That was meant to be a sad trombone.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was a bit
work.
Like a duck being stepped on. The kind of fascinating thing about this is, you know, she called an election to enhance her authority. and I think whatever the result is, she has purchased herself only a small amount of breathing room before
it couldn't have happened to a nicer person, could it?
There's a great line in Marina Hyde's thing about the kind of the big Tory fishes slip silently through the night water, you know, quoting the beginning of Jaws. And that's kind of how I feel about her. And I think one of the things, people I would also bracket in the loser bracket is her two closest advisors, Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill, because whatever you say about the campaign that they've run, they have become names that people know. And for an advisor, that's always, you are then at a kind of vulnerable time. I mean, it happened with Steve Hilton, right? It kind of happened a bit with Ed Llewellyn even. You become the locus of people who want to be angry with the king but can't express, you know, treachery. So yeah. it's all attributed to you.
Yeah, I think let's stop and talk about how bad the Tory campaign's been, because
because it's fun.
It's such fun.
But it's also reassuring, right? Because I do feel that this is a party that is beatable. Like, this is a reassuring thing for the left, that this is not some incredible monolith which, with its much greater money, is just completely unassailable. There are some pretty big chinks in that wall you could put a mallet into. No, what is the thing that you hit with a mallet? Why am I asking you about carpentry? I don't know. But
yeah,
anyway.
I don't know. I don't do the DIY in our house. But also, I think, don't you hit things with a mallet?
You hit the chisel with the mallet. There we go.
Okay, cool. But yeah, I think...
I do a lot of stonemasonry on the weekends, as you can tell.
Yeah. I think there are lots of reasons why Theresa May has had a bad campaign. And yeah, I think the debate, and I imagine, again, not to get too close to predicting the result till the end, but I imagine will form part of the conversation afterwards, is basically, could another well-known brand have defeated Theresa May?
Oh, okay. I'll bring in the You Ask Us. Let's wrap it seamlessly into this, because at Lurid Mandy, I don't think a reference, sadly, to Peter Mandelson, said, you know, actually, would another more conventional leader have struggled against strong and stable Theresa May? And I do think there is an interesting thing about the fact that they, I think they in some ways... struggled, because they had their playbook, the Tories, against Jeremy Corbyn laid out from the start, right? They knew what they were going to say about him. You know, he's weak on defence. He's like well mates with Gerry Adams. But actually, they have really struggled to deal with the fact that he has got a kind of a strange kind of charisma, right? A very homely, folksy. I think Julia once called him Woodcraft Dad, right? You know, he just makes me think of, you know, badgers and foxes and the animals and Farthing Wood. And that's quite an appealing brand versus Theresa May.
He's
so
just the kind of
Yvette
person.
Cooper would have had a difficulty because they couldn't have said Theresa May is a bit dull when Yvette Cooper is not known for her sparkling repartee.
Yeah, I think Julia is exactly right. Jeremy always reminds me of, partly because I grew up in that part of the world, so he basically is the kind of dad who comes down when you get back to someone's house from a house party and offers everyone a toke, right? So you just feel very reassured by him. But he also seems tangible, right? In that way than Ed did seem a little bit like he was made of plastic. But I think I kind of...
He's so that dad. I hadn't really thought about that before,
but
that's hilarious.
You can imagine everyone gets a bit nervous. Like, oh, God, the dad's come down. He's like, no, everyone. Yeah, like, just...
Guys, is that weed you're smoking? Oh, it's so much stronger than it used to be in the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, as we found out from his Unilad interview, he doesn't even drink. He recommends coconut water or apple juice for hydration.
Yeah. So I kind of feel the same way about this meme, which is mainly the kind of Yvette would have won than I do about Bernie would have won, right? In both their cases, why is Yvette Cooper not leader of the Labour Party? For two reasons. One, because some of her allies thought it would be a good idea to put Jeremy Corbyn on the ballot, which turned out to be a
one
comic.
Of the worst bits like, of banter.
I mean, it did successfully hurt Andy Burnham, to be fair. But
although Andy Burnham, you know, really has had the last laugh.
Yeah. But so I think one... But yeah, and the problem with both of them, right, is in order to win the Labour leadership election, and this will remain true forever, you need to have a message that appeals to small L liberals, mainly working in or around the public and creative sector, you know, kind of 30 to 50, socially concerned, you know, kind of lots of people first in their generation to go to university or first to have a white collar job, depending on how old they are in the party. And that is the electorate. And ditto, if you want to become the Democratic candidate, you do have to have a message that is able to win over a vast majority of African Americans of all ages. And if you spend the whole of your campaign going, I'm surging, and you're like, yeah, sure you are, apart from this really important group, and then you lose, and you turn around and go...
The Democratic Party stitched it up. I nominate a loser, Jeremy Paxman. Had a two shockers of interviews, seemed like a Jeremy Paxman tribute act. And kind of revealed that style of interviewing just felt quite elderly. It just felt a bit outdated now. Winner, I think, whoever put Corbyn in the suits that he's been wearing.
I did really notice this. So I did a 12-minute film about Jeremy, and you do really notice how much sharper he looks now.
Yeah,
he does
got really nice suits.
Does look impressive
and
Prime Minister and all of that.
Done the beard. He's probably got beard oil. This is something I've been learning about because my husband's grown a beard. Apparently there is such a thing as beard oil. It's really, I quite like it. And both my mum and his mum also really like it. So I think it's here to stay. Losers, Boris Johnson, who has looked either uneasy or slightly thuggish when he was sort of wrestling Andrew Gwynn on telly.
So my theory with Boris, sorry, to continue this thing of delaying every single one of these winners and losers,
yeah,
is the thing is, right, if you know, I'm not saying that people admire their friends who sleep with other people and get around and are a bit, but if you do that in your 20s and 30s, it's like, oh, you know, he's a wild man. And he's kind of become like that person who's still sleeping on your couch in their 30s. And there's just something, you know, it's like oddly, and somehow his increasing width does mean he feels less like a joker and more like a thug.
Yeah, I described in a magazine this week as seeming a bit like the kind of rocker who wobbles on stage when they're a bit out of shape because they need to pay for their divorce.
Yeah.
He had that kind of vibe. Winner, El Gato, Jeremy Corbyn's cat, who has become the kind of... Theresa May's got kitten heels and Jeremy Corbyn's got a literal actual cat that has become his relatable thing that he can talk about in interviews and people be like, oh, well, how will El Gato get on with Larry and Palmerston? And he can do some chuckling about, like... And again, very, very Woodcraft dad. Who else? Loser Philip Hammond, who's been kept in a box.
I disagree. I think Philip Hammond is...
Or do you think he's just sat this one out?
...the massive winner of this election, right? One, because, like, the thing a lot of Tory MPs say, and actually, in my view, rightly, is if they had had a positive right-wing offer, you know, a tax cut, bring back mortgage tax relief, you know, let's just give, you know, young upwardly mobile couples more money because they deserve it. You know, some kind of classic Tory goody. They would not have created the space for, because I think
the space for what?
The space for Corbyn, right? And because people have to be turned off something in order to look around the shop, right? You, if you walk into a restaurant and you like it, or you walk into a shop and they've got like the milk you want, you don't go, oh, I'll go next door to see if it's there, right?
So say what you like about Corbyn and his, like, the big surprise to me about the campaign is actually, you know, he's put in a kind of classic New Labour thing, which is a big middle class bung in the shape of tuition fees. And actually he's withered and wothered, it wasn't in the manifesto, to unfreeze benefits uprating. Yes, yeah. I'm talking about that. So actually, when you look at the distribution graphs, the Lib Dem platform is much more progressive than Labour's in terms of how the different deciles will be affected by
And he's really changes. He's triangulated really effectively on the, like, adding the police into the austerity stuff.
He has been much more flexible than I think people who see him as a very dogmatic leftist would perhaps have expected. Emily Thornberry, I think, has been a winner. Solid. Thorbs. She'll go out there, she does the job. The policy might be mad, but she will just hit the straight bat. She'll keep chipping it into the crease. I don't know.
And
that might be...
She's just clearly living her best life. Yeah, that bit which is, oh, but Michael, what about your sort of Syria thing? She's just clearly having a great time. And also, I mean, she has ballot issues in terms of how she gets onto the ballot. But I think if there is a leadership election at any point in the foreseeable future and Emily Thornberry is able to make it onto the ballot, which is her big if, I think she will comfortably beat.
I think she's got the same Abbott issues, though, which is a lot of people just don't like her. They find her a bit Hyacinth Bouquet.
Yeah, but not in the Labour Party.
Yeah, so, but I think in a general election campaign, that would be pretty brutal. Angela Rayner, I think, has had a good campaign. She's emerged as sort of a more eloquent, less punchy Prescott. You know, she has become the guarantor of kind of authentic Labour values in the sense of, you know, I left school, Labour did this for me. I'm not come through university PPE degree and SPAD, right? That
yeah, and
strain.
She kind of seems non-factional, and she's kind of, I mean, to be honest, she's sort of doing, I think, what people hoped Dan Jarvis would do, but she has something about her.
Yeah, and Barry Gardner, who is, again, just living his best life.
He's also got such a soothing voice.
Anywhere, he will turn up and just chuckle, kind of.
During the local elections, happily. He was doing the kind of spin, and I was thinking, I can't have your soothing radio voice at 4 a.m. when I'm trying to do a live blog, Barry. I actually had to, like, start pinching myself whenever he came on, because he's so, you know, he's just so calm and soothing.
I always think of, you know, the Family Ness, and Angus, the, you know, the whatever it was, with his thistle whistle.
Yeah.
So there we go. That is the winners and losers of the campaign so far. Join us again on Friday, where we will have a special bleary-eyed, you know, results-drunk version of the podcast.
Oh, we didn't do a prediction. What's yours?
Tory majority of 50 is what I started the campaign with. So I'm going to stay with that on the basis that then at least I will have only been wrong in one way rather than a variety of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I too am basically going to double down on my campaigns don't matter theory. The exciting thing is I will know for certain if that's wrong at the end of this campaign. So I think it will look like whatever the last poll before the 17th
really
of April,
interesting
except
thing.
The Lib Dem vote will have collapsed to Labour's benefit and UKIP will have collapsed to the Tories' benefit. There'll be some churn under that. You know, some Lib Dems will have gone Tory, but, you know, that'll be it.
The Who's Best PM ratings are currently at 45% for May and 32% for Corbyn, which I think is a really interesting sub-thing. What everybody I talk to says is that actually looking at those headline poll figures is not great, because there is a completely different picture in Midlands and North of England marginals, and that's really where the election is won or lost.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Stephen Bush, and Helen Lewis. Our music is Devil by the Devil by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons. We are produced by India Bork and mixed by James Shield. I know it's customary at this point to say it doesn't matter who you vote for as long as you vote. I disagree. It matters very strongly who you vote for. But with that proviso, do make sure to vote.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.